If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
So when someone complains to me that, oh, I don't have money, I can't do it, I'm like, dude, America has a lot of opportunities. This is the land of opportunities. If I could survive without any friends, any family, any relatives, and no money, you could too.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Alpesh Parmar is an entrepreneur, real estate investor, author, mentor, and podcast host. He owns over 100 residential rental units, and he invests in international markets like Belize, Panama, Paraguay, and India. He once owned a cryptocurrency mining business, and he believes in blockchain technology. He's passionate about helping busy working professionals build long-term wealth using investments in real assets. He believes that wealth, fitness, and mental health are the keys to living a successful and stress-free life. Alpesh, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sam, for having me.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. The pleasure is mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Some pretty interesting questions. So where did I start? I became an accidental landlord in 2011 when the market has already collapsed, right? Real estate market. And my wife and I wanted to buy a bigger house, but we couldn't sell our earlier one because being in San Francisco Bay Area, we were like 50% underwater. So at that point, you know, I'm like, I had put down like 25%. I don't want to lose that capital. Neither I wanted to just walk away, you know, and mess up my credit because I wanted to keep moving forward, right? So we ended up renting that house and we bought a bigger place. So that taught me about real estate. I'm like, this is how it works. I can rent it out. I get the rent, blah, blah, blah. So that was my first landlording experience. But then I was like, this does not make me much money if I look back, because I was in San Francisco Bay Area. So in 2015, when the market came back pretty much, I was able to break even and sell that property. I could have capped it, but I wanted to reinvest in a cash flowing markets, right? So that's 2015 is where I would say the real journey started, because I started buying turnkey single family homes out of state, pretty much from Cleveland, Ohio. It started to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to some parts of Illinois. And pretty much I learned about real estate as I went through that journey. And in the end, I realized I got to scale up. I cannot just continue to buy single family real estate and think that this will help me retire, right? This is not how it will work. So I decided to then jump into commercial real estate.
What does that mean now for you when you say commercial real estate?
So commercial means you are able to look at bigger properties, larger properties. And so I moved from single family to fourplex. This is still residential, but then I ended up buying 2 9-unit buildings in 2017. And those are commercial because now you cannot get traditional financing anymore.
Right.
When you are up to 4 units, you can go to your local bank, your lender, etc., and get financing. When you go over 4 units, they count as commercial.
Right.
So that's what I learned at that time, that it took me 4 months to close that property because I thought, oh, yeah, I'm bankable, you know, this, that. And they said, no, this is a commercial loan. So lessons learned, that make sure you have all your ducks in a row, because I had to keep putting more earnest money every extension. And then I had to close on that property no matter what, because by that time I was like 20 grand in. So, but yeah, and long story short, commercial lending was not easy. I think it's easier than traditional financing because they don't look at your personal income, but also they want to make sure you have enough experience in the space. And even though I had experience in single family, that did not count. I was always investing out of state single family. They said, oh, you do not invest in this particular state. Alabama was the one where I had bought 9-unit property. And 6 months ago, I had bought a 9-unit property in California. And even that they did not consider, because you are out of state, you are just an investor, blah, blah, blah. So it took me a while to find a bank. I had to pay, you know, a couple of brokers to, you know, get to the closing table. But finally, we closed and I sold the 9-unit property, which I had bought in 2017 itself. I sold it last year. But I've still kept the 9-unit I have in Birmingham, Alabama, and knock on the wood, it's been doing good.
Right. When you say you had to pay a couple brokers, what did you mean by that?
So I had to pay. So pretty much I was working with one broker and they were charging upfront fees. So I paid them like $1,000 or something. And they tried 2 to 3 times. Then he said, oh, yeah, can you work with another broker? And then we went through this broker, and that broker, of course, got me to the closing table, but then she had like 2% fee at the funding. So I ended up paying a pretty penny to close that. But lessons learned that if you want to go bigger, really go big.
Right. Yeah. So they, this was the lender. This was the broker, the lending broker.
The lending broker. Yes.
Right. So is that, I guess, so you've bought both of those 9-unit properties. What's your target purchase now?
Since then, I moved on to large mobile multifamily buildings. But then over time, in 2018, I closed on one with a lot of investors and another sponsored partner. But I realized that it was hard to find multifamily properties, right? There was compressing cap rates. There was just a lot of competition by gurus and their students, because every guru is selling multifamily courses right now. And I'm not trying to, defame them, but like all of them are also asking all of their students to go out and find multifamily property and partner up. So there are like 5-6 partners on each of those deals. So just numbers stopped making sense to me. So I realized that I have to find something else in real estate. Of course, I want to continue to do real estate. So I started studying about mobile home parks and senior housing in 2018. So those are the two assets I'm currently focused on. Closed on my first mobile home park with my investors last year. And we are actually about to, and I'm not supposed to because it's a 506B deal. Well, we are oversubscribed on our new construction senior housing. I don't want to, you know, name the place, etc. And because, you know, confidentiality. But so I'm looking forward to that one. You know, as soon as that one closes, that would be my first senior housing as well.
How did you educate yourself on the senior housing space?
So that's interesting because one of my friends, she's a nurse in senior housing space. So she has been telling me since 2017 that I need to get on senior housing space. So I said, okay. And we kept looking for properties here in California because both of us are here. And senior housing is a different animal than multifamily or mobile home park. It requires a lot more operational work, right? It's not just collecting rent. You are taking care of someone's parents, someone's family, right? So you don't want to mess that up. It has its own, state has licensing requirements. There is business licensing requirement, et cetera, et cetera. So we kept looking, but again, in California, especially close to me in Bay Area, numbers still did not make sense.
Right.
So I took a course by Gene Guarino, who sells a lot of courses as well about assisted living, you know, building assisted living in a single family house. And I kept looking and just still that model would not work for me. Again, same principle applies from single family to multifamily or commercial. Then I'm like, it has to be big. So then I took his course. I learned as much as I can, but I wanted to partner up with someone who has done it, right? So I found an operator last year. We were about to close and COVID hit and we could not close on that property after being in contract for 9 months. So then I still kept looking and, with another partner we have been working with, we found this land in, particular part of Midwest. So we are going to build a brand new facility now.
Wow. There's a lot of questions to ask on that. So you went 9 months under contract.
Yes.
For a facility and then ended up not closing because it just, what caused it not to close?
So we were supposed to close on March 15th and last year, right? March 12th, California, especially Bay Area, announced lockdown. So the lender backed out. Like 3 days before, they said, we are having, a lot of issues right now. Then we kept looking for lenders, but none of the lenders will match the terms we had.
Right.
So that took us a while. By the time we found the lender, it was another 6 months, which would match the terms we had. Right before close, about 3 weeks before closing, COVID actually hit the senior housing facility. So the numbers dropped. Three people died. There are a lot of vacancies. Now the numbers dropped, and the lender said, we'll have to come up with another $1.5 million as down payment to close on the property. But if we do that, then we barely make any money. Anyway, even investors, no one makes any money by that point. You know how it is. If you bring more down payment in the table, you have more people who needs to earn, right?
Well, right. Yeah, you're decreasing your leverage.
Exactly. The equity is decreased as well, right? It diluted. So we decided not to close on the property because the seller, of course, had waited for a while and he didn't want to change the purchase price either. So
did you lose earnest money or anything on that deal?
Oh, yes. Yes. About 100,000.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. With, I think there were four of us. So four sponsors. I had put in 10 grand. So of course, not a lot, but still pretty good amount of money and a lot of weight. The amount of weight we did, we had wired funds. We were ready. All the investors. So that was the worst part of it.
Yeah. Losing 100 grand is painful. I mean, very, very painful.
Yes.
I think it's also the emotional pain. I mean,
yes,
there's so much work and there's so much anticipation and just the forecasting and talking to your friends and getting investors on board. I mean, that's just the earnest money. That doesn't account the time.
That's exactly what it is. Now, anytime I'm going to a deal table, I just keep thinking, am I going to be able to close?
Yes, it's a fair question. It's a fair question. And I think people would do well to really build more exits
right
into their contracts than what they maybe are, just so you don't. I mean, it's one thing to lose the time investment. It's another thing to lose the money investment as
right.
well. So golly, but either way, I mean, this is a great, the name of the show is how to scale commercial real estate. And so I think you're bringing up some excellent, just things that we run into as
yep.
we learn to scale. So how did you end up pivoting to deciding to build a brand new facility in a particular market? Like, how did you just say, okay, we're going to do that market and then we're going to build there?
So again, we had, my investment philosophy is either I got to have one cash flow with tax benefits, and if I don't, I'm not going to have that, then instead of waiting for a value add deal, let me just wait a while, build something brand new, like A+ class asset in an A class neighborhood, and then that will take care of my appreciation, because if nothing else, some institutional money will come in and buy that property from us, right? So I was talking to another friend of mine who is a developer, and I didn't realize that, of course, I thought he's in senior care, but he only focuses on new build senior care.
Mm.
So this would be his fourth new construction in last 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And they all have been doing good. So, we kept talking and I said, I want to jump into senior care. This is what happened. And he said, okay, if you are open, we can partner up. So that's how it started. And again, as you said, there is a lot more work which goes into it. It's not a 5-minute We were talking for 6 months before we thought, this union will work. Even though as a friend, it's a different story. But when you are going to work in a partnership or in a business, it's a whole different world. So we chatted for 6 months and he said, okay, we found the land now. Are you still interested? So I said, okay, let me fly out there. I looked at the land, even though I didn't need to, but I just wanted to, continue to learn as much as I can. So pretty much he has kept me in loop on everything which has been happening with the deal. And then my side of the work, I was talking to my investors. Of course, I want to learn the new construction side, because now that the more I'm looking at the numbers and the more I understand about this deal, we are thinking about building another one in Florida. So as soon as this is done, we'll start looking for land, because it's about a year before you can, find something and get under contract and plan everything out.
Oh yeah, by the time you get the land under contract, then get your entitlements done. And then, yes. I mean, just getting through that phase could be, depending on the municipality, can be, you know,
yep,
extremely long drawn out process.
Yeah.
So that is very cool. So I think one of the keys that you mentioned here was that you found a partner who already had experience in the space.
Yes.
And so the value that, can you define again, you know, obviously bringing capital to the table is part of it, but there's some benefits and you becoming a partner with the builder developer as well. What are some of those things maybe that you were able to bring to the table that the rest of us could say, okay, those are some things we can do?
Sure. So one is, of course, investor capital, right? That's the start. But also the investor relationship management. It's not just, you know, bringing the capital and saying, okay, yeah, because that's a strict no-no, as you know.
Sure.
But investor relationship, as well as the software side, because I come from IT world. And my friend who I'm working with, and he has there are two other partners. One of them, one guy is a construction guy. He has a construction company, and he has been constructing for 35 years, multifamily and senior housing only. So he knows his stuff, right? So I'm going to bring to the table the IT and software side, because they are not used to IT. And so they have all the processing in place, but they are all on paper. And I'm like, oh yeah, we could use Monday for this. We could use another investor portal for managing all the investors. They're like, really? Yeah. I said, yeah, they can see, they can log in, they can see their distribution, everything. So that is what I'm going to bring to the table, because I have been running business, my own IT business, for the last 10 years. So, you know, I always prefer that I have some systemization in place, right? So automation, having the processes in place. So they are looking forward to that as well.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, that people were able to get the things done they were able to get done all these years without the software and the helps that we have now. Like, even something as simple as K-1 distribution.
Yes, true.
Yeah, you run a large firm and you're distributing 300, 400, 500 K-1s, and that becomes a full-time job for somebody, it seems, for a couple of weeks. So, yeah, that's really cool that you're able to bring that to the table. What does it look like for you in the mobile home park space? Is that something you're actively pursuing still, or is that something more on the sidelines as it comes to you?
So, but both, I prefer both the mobile home park and senior housing. Mobile home park, because I believe in America right now, we have a big housing crisis. I want to be involved in this affordable housing area, right? I want to be able to provide affordable housing. So I will be active in that space. That space I learned on my own. I just pivoted from multifamily, so it wasn't hard to learn. So that space I can handle on my own. I don't need a partner. Of course, I would still partner. You know, real estate is a team game. So I'm still talking to a couple of partners right now. But that piece, you know, I think it's here to stay. We really need to build as many mobile home parks as possible. I know communities are against it. I know municipalities don't like them. But we do need to provide housing to these people. Especially, you know, living in Bay Area, if I cannot find anything for 1.5 million, I don't know how the people who work at Starbucks and Walmart can even live in this area, right? And same thing in most part of the country. And the senior housing space, I believe that it will continue to grow. Baby boomer would be the largest population base, how we are growing by 2023 or early 2024. So they also need a place to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It is interesting how the, you know, mobile home parks are just not, they're not anyone's darling. Like the
Nope.
cities don't want them built, but yet they serve a critical need. Are there other ways or other types of workforce housing that you would think would be on par with that cities are allowing to be built?
I know some cities do allow, like, specifically blue-collar workforce housing facilities as well. And one of my friends is building one in Kansas City, Missouri. So, but like in Bay Area, there is no space, right? And if there is space, it's being gobbled up by large real estate developers. They want to sell single-family houses, right? You know, they just got to copy-paste the entire thing and start selling them. instead of worrying about workforce housing.
Yeah, space in the Bay Area would be a certain barrier to building
new. Yeah, it's a rare commodity.
yeah. I'm just wondering. I mean, one of the things that we've looked into quite a bit is low income housing tax credit properties. Now we just bought one, but it's at the end of the LIHTC period.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's still got about 8 years left on it, but you know, we've not done something ground up or purchased one, you know, in its tax credit period where it, you know, you're actually still cashing in tax credits. So I think that would be an interesting. I've not looked into that either. Do you have anything? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I looked into a couple of deals like that, and both of them had about 8 to 10 years left. So I do remember, but I did look into something which I think the TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did to gentrify the neighborhoods, right? The opportunity zones, right? So I looked into those for some time, just that, again, in opportunity zone world, it would not make sense to just do value add because you got to spend the same amount of money you would have, you know, pretty much spent to acquire the property. So that for the new construction, I think opportunity zone is another one how municipalities and government are trying to help some of these low income or low income housing families, right? Because you are going to some of those neighborhoods, you know, they are hoping that you will build either, you know, workforce housing or some kind of, you know, multifamily and pretty much bring new jobs as well, right? When you build something around there, that area will develop at some point. So I have been looking into those because the tax benefits are crazy good, but just numbers, you know, have to make work, right?
You have to make the numbers work, and you have to be prepared for, I think, a lot of just red tape and a lot of stuff. It's overwhelming. So it's one of those where if you get into that niche, you've got to go deep. I think you got to go really deep and know it inside and out in order to make it work. So I like your idea of, you know, maybe going a little bit broader and finding key operators in the mobile home park space and or doing it on your own, and especially in the senior housing space, because that's something I think a lot of people are interested in. But just finding experienced people, I think, is one of the keys that you've implemented well. I want to hear about your number one Amazon best-selling book, Resilience, Turning Your Setback into a Comeback. What's that about?
Thank you for asking about the book. Yeah, so I was working with a couple of investors and then, the real estate entrepreneurs. And they said, oh, they are working on a book. You know, they have to write a chapter in the book. I said, oh, I would be interested. I also have a story to tell. So that's how it started. And pretty much it hears stories by everyone, how they were resilient, how they turned their life around. And there is a book, there is a chapter in the book by me as well. And if anyone of your listeners reach out to me or subscribes to my newsletter, they can get a free soft copy of the book, or they can reach out to me and I can see if I can send a hard copy as well. But the story is that I came from India as an immigrant, right, about 20 years ago, and how I struggled in US and how I was resilient. I didn't want to give up. I saw 9/11 happen in front of my eyes. I was there like on Sunday. It happened on Tuesday. I was on the World Trade Center on Sunday. So I saw how the lives changed all around me. I saw how I lost my job twice in that year, in 2001. And then I had to start all over. I did my master's in computer science while I did not have any money. So when someone complains to me that, oh, I don't have money, I can't do it, I'm like, dude, America has a lot of opportunities. This is the land of opportunities. If I could survive without any friends, any family, any relatives, and no money, you could too. So that's the story about how I went from that, how I again lost job in 2009, and I started my own business, and I never worked a W-2 job again.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And that's a story that I think is... you know, it's drawn, obviously, people from all over the world here for a very long time. And it's a story, I think, that is under assault. So good for you for, you know, once again, just going out there and proving that it can be done.
Oh, yes.
It can be done. So that's fantastic. Alpesh, let's jump here into the final four if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Pull the trigger. Don't wait. That is the biggest problem I see. I talk to so many investors, I teach them. And then I ask them after a year, did you do anything? Nothing. We are still waiting for the right deal. You cannot have your first deal as a blockbuster deal. If you can, well and good, but then you are not going to learn anything.
Right. Yeah. True statement. True statement. What is one thing that you are doing to stay on top of your game?
Stay organized. That's the key. Because I was all over the place and I still stumble upon, but I read the Miracle Morning book and I realized I got to have a planner, right? I got to make sure that I take care of the things which are most important and take care of them before they become urgent.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one thing you are doing to make the world a better place?
Yes, that is why I'm focused on mobile home parks and senior housing now. Because I want to make affordable housing available to everyone who needs it and also make sure those communities are better than they were before, right? And senior housing, we have to take care of our seniors.
Right, right. That's awesome. That's awesome. Alpesh, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. They can go to my website, wealthmatters.com, WealthMatters.com. Or they can also email me at alpesh@wealthmatters.com.
Alpesh, thanks so much for your time today. This was great. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.